quasi-cerebral talk and tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You are tuned in to Typically Tuesdays here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We are the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we're broadcasting on the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Ketse, Kwikwetlem, and Stolo First Nations. And at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship, for without it, we can't even make the show. My name is Leslie. I'm bringing you an exciting conversation, part one of two, with the organizers of Chinatown Together. You might have heard me talk about Chinatown Together a number of times on the program before. They're an anti-gentrification, intergenerational, cultural revitalization. Ooh, lots of descriptors there. But they're a grassroots organization that does all of those things. And they throw events in Chinatown, centering Chinatown residents, businesses, and people who are often left out of important discussions about urban development, particularly in Vancouver and in Chinatown. So you'll be hearing a conversation that I have with that I had with the co-founders of Chinatown Together on this hour of the show. We're going to be talking about Chinatown Together as an organization, what their purpose is, how they came about, what types of events they throw, and how they center seniors in their work, how they center the residents of Chinatown and the businesses of Chinatown in their work. So stick around for that. And that's really basically the show today. It's going to be a really talk-heavy show, and I hope you enjoy. We're going to listen to that conversation right after this PSA.
This is Bird Note. I'm J. Drew Lanham, an ornithologist, naturalist, and writer. As we consider redacting the names of people from birds, it's important to remember birds are flesh, feather, and bone monuments of life, hope, and higher aspiration. So it does matter. But I'm just one black bird-loving ornithologist, so what can I do? This is what. I'm taking the lark by the horns and forming my own committee of one. Henceforth, I no longer refer to Bachman Sparrow by the racist's name tacked to it by some other racist buddy named John James. It is now back to a better, melodiously appropriate name in my book, Pine Woods Sparrow. Likewise, the likely extinct southern warbler with the Bachman name on its front end will also be typed by habitat instead of hate. It will be Swamp Cane Warbler, because that's what it loved to skulk around in before we drove it out of existence. Those are just a couple of the naming controversies currently in question. I wanted to help the experts with some super simple ones from my personal feel guide. Not field, but feel, because emotions are involved here. You're welcome. For Bird Note, I'm J. Drew Lanham.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays here on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Leslie. I have the deep pleasure and honor today to be talking to two really great people who've formed an organization you might have heard me talk about on the program before. The organization is called Chinatown Together. And I thought it would be a good time to talk a bit about what it is they exactly do, why they do it, and all that good stuff with the organizers, Gal and Melody. Hello, and welcome to the program.
Hi, Leslie. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us today.
Before we get into the deep stuff, would you be able to introduce yourselves as individuals?
For sure. I can go first. My name is Gal, she. I am a Chinese-Canadian with deep familial roots in Chinatown, in Vancouver's Chinatown specifically. And I'm also a local artist and advocate for Chinatown.
I'm Melody Ma. I go by she, her. I went to school in Strathcona School as well as Chinese school in Chinatown. So like Gal, a lot of deep roots there. And I got passionate about getting involved in Chinatown around 2016-ish in terms of community activism and really kind of getting back into exploring my personal roots. In the daytime, I'm a tech entrepreneur, and so I have my own software company.
Awesome. Thank you. Since we're going to be talking about your organization specifically, what is Chinatown Together?
Chinatown Together is a intergenerational events-based organization trying to revitalize Chinatown through fun and culturally appropriate events. We do this mainly to increase the quality of living for local Chinatown residents and neighboring residents, as well as fighting against gentrification. One thing that why we decided to make an events-based organization is because people do have the stigmatization that Chinatown is dead, which it is not. It is quite lively. So we've decided to officialize Chinatown Together as like a hub for how events can come together in the community, featuring local talent from and within Chinatown to show that Chinatown, if you put in the effort to look for it and source it, like there are things to do, and it's very colorful, vibrant, and cultural.
Thank you, Gal. One of the phrases that I guess that would really describe for me of what you're trying to say is the term Yi Lao, right? Which is the term that often comes up in a lot of the promotional material and descriptors of Chinatown Together. Yi Lao in Cantonese means lively and joyful. How did your organization come about? How did it form?
Chinatown Together actually formed in September, fall 2023 as sort of more of an official collective with its brand name. But before that, it actually stemmed from activism in the neighborhood, particularly around this building called 105 Kiefer. That is a gentrifier building being developed by BD Living. And so one of their projects that they proposed almost a decade ago now is in the heart of Chinatown. So right next to the Chinatown Memorial Plaza that serves to honor the veterans as well as railway workers of Chinatown and Chinese Canadian, and also right next to the Sun Yat-sen Park, right next to historic Pender Street. So right around all these cultural assets, as well as the Chinese the Chinese Cultural Museum's archives building. So they proposed this event first. I think it was 12-story building, and then we pushed it. The community pushed back, got it defeated in 2016-2017 through City Hall. It never happened before. The entire real estate industry was like, the sky is falling, this is the last of our industry. But then it went actually through a development permit application. And the difference there is that it goes through the bureaucracy instead of the political side with City Council. And so they came back with a 9-story building that also got rejected by the top bureaucrats of City of Vancouver at that time. And for a moment there, Chinatown thought like, okay, wow, you know, the community rose up, it pushed back, it won again. This is part of a series of generational activism from, you know, the freeway fight in the 70s to like the barbecue meat fights. There was a fire hall fight in Strathcona, and time again the community has won, and this is like another example where the community has pushed back against gentrification and real estate developers that want to extract from a low income and culturally significant neighborhood. And there was a pause there for a moment. And in 2018, we actually, there were other youth groups that were very active in public space events, particularly Youth Collaborative for Chinatown. They hosted a lot of Mahjong events. And really, it's called Hot and Noisy because of that Eat Now. And they would host that, and that was very popular. And then Chinatown Today, which is an organization that tells stories about Chinatown, also hosted a film night that was very popular. And we also worked with Hua Foundation that hosted weekly markets to pick up green groceries from a local Chinese-Canadian farmer. So during 2018, there was all this liveliness that came back after all of these fights around activating public spaces. And then everybody got kind of exhausted, other than Youth Collaborative for Chinatown that continued to do their Mahjong events that are very well received. Fast forward, while the community, you know, COVID, all of these things happening, The BD Living Corporation decided to sue their way through the BC Supreme Court to say that they needed their decision of rejection re-adjudicated by the city, and it wasn't fair because apparently there were no reasons cited or written down. And they got what they wanted. They got they were able to get that re-adjudication last year on May 2023, right at the start of Asian Heritage Month. And so there was another fight, again, bringing community together to push back against this building that was exactly the same application that we all rejected. Unfortunately, at this time, a portion of the community decided to flip the script and support the building this time, support the gentrifiers, saying that it will actually bring people to Chinatown and it'll be good for Chinatown. These organizations are such as Carol Lee's Chinatown Foundation, the Sun Yat-sen Garden that was headed by Lorraine Low at that time, the Chinatown BIA, the Chinese Cultural Center, the Freemason Society, the Chinese Benevolent Society, and the Vancouver Chinatown Merchants Association. Some of these organizations already supported before, but now there was this group of Chinatown folks who decided for some reason something has changed, and they now support the gentrifier and the gentrification of Chinatown through BD's 105 Kiefer. And it was very disheartening. But the rest of us still stayed strong, and we protested. We got, you know, hundreds of people out, especially seniors in Chinatown, to protest, at City Hall to protest multiple times. Over 100 speakers came out, whereas the other side only brought out like less than 24. But despite that, the odds weren't in our favor, and 105 Kiefer did get approved this time. And one of the things I was telling the folks I was working with at that time was that if this application did go through, let's just make a lot of noise in the public space right next to the site, because gentrifiers don't like loudness. They don't like it when people make a lot of noise. So let's like bring out the lion dance drums and just like bang on the drums. Let's like create cultural events where we have seniors singing karaoke really loud to demonstrate that we are here and we're not going to leave, even though the gentrifiers want to erase our culture and push us out. And so from there, that is how the series of events happen every weekend called Occupy 105 Kiefer, where we did everything from stand-up comedy to kung fu lion dancing workshops. And that's how I met Gal, or at that point, I knew Gal as Lucky Money. I don't know, Gal, if you wanted to talk about how we actually met each other.
Yeah. So I'm an artist. Like I do art, I go to markets, and I really wanted to connect more with Chinatown, like in a more meaningful, direct way, not just like, oh, I'm coming in, I'm shopping, I'm eating here. Really wanted to connect with the people. My grandmother is a founding board member of Sun Yat-sen Garden. So when I learned that they like had community day markets and also, you know, a gift shop, I already knew about the gift shop. I applied for the gift shop, got in, and then they let me know about their market, and I was like, amazing, I'd love to be one of the vendors, right? It was my way of reconnecting with my family and my grandmother's legacy, but in my own way, because my grandmother and my grandfather had a lot of involvement in the building blocks of Chinatown, and my aunt is a filmmaker and an activist. So for me, I thought, oh, I'll just come in and just be more present as a person and slowly kind of like learn about who's here in Chinatown and make more friendships and meaningful connections. That said, I also learned about 105 Kiefer and what was happening. I did not know about who signed this letter of support for 105 Kiefer right away. So here's me, an artist, popping up at these markets, you know, meeting people, people like my art, you know, and I actually made a lot of friends with people at the garden, including Lorraine. I actually had a very good impression of her when I met her. But when I heard about 105 Kiefer and I learned that Sun Yat-sen Gardens was one of the seven organizations that signed that letter in approval and support of BD, I was heartbroken, and I started doing more research, and I was trying to catch up. I felt like I wasn't properly entering Chinatown since I didn't know about this. And I saw this article where CBC interviewed some elders and also Lorraine. And the elders were, in general, saying, I'm not against development, but we do prefer that this development is meaningful and beneficial for the local community, which makes sense. And then I saw Lorraine's portion, and she's walking through the garden. It's a beautiful day. She's looking up at the sun, and she's smiling. And she answers the interviewer's question saying, yeah, I think it's a great, the development's great, and it's going to be great for economic revitalization and great for the seniors too. And I'm not being over dramatic. I actually felt really sick hearing that, and I wanted to throw up. And I cried for several days. I talked to my partner about this like conflict of like morals inside my heart. Because, you know, I got to know Lorraine as a market vendor at the garden. I thought she was nice and supportive of my artwork. But then I heard this, and I could not personally be an artist co-signing the garden as it stands now, as the board stands, with their views on 105 Kiefer. I felt sick to my stomach, and I felt like I was duped into joining this part of the community that seemed so great and welcoming. So I processed it as most artists do, and I made some art about how I felt. And I made a zine called Heart to Heart, and it was just talking about the effects of gentrification. It didn't mention any entities at all. It was just a personal conversation with me, and I was talking about how we need to be like more vigilant about fighting gentrification and meaningful revitalization. So I had one more market with Sun Yat-sen Gardens, and I was planning to quietly kind of just exit and no longer participate after that. But I wanted to promote my zine, right? And again, I need to emphasize this so hard. My zine did not mention any entities, simply talking about my personal story with gentrification, how when I was younger, I saw Chinatown and how it was. And now that I'm older, lots of things are different. Lots of businesses are gone. And there's businesses that mock Chinese history with a cocktail about called Opium Sour. And so I promoted my my zine on Instagram, as you would as an artist. And, you know, you tag the market that you're going to be at, etc. And normally, Sun Yat-sen Gardens is really fast to reshare, like, my things on social media. And I noticed that they stopped promoting me at all. And I already paid my deposit as a vendor. And I was really thinking, should I just not go to this? Or should I just take up space since I'm already there? And I was also kind of fearful of, like, repercussions I would face. I decided that, you know, this is part of my grandmother's legacy. And even though it's changed from since it was founded, I still want to be there for one last time and educate people. And I think my zine would still be educational to people. Melody was actually doing a Chinese school with a community member outside and teaching vocabulary about anti-gentrification. So everyone that came to my table, I was like, hey, you should go outside. You can learn some cool Chinese vocabulary. So I'm trying to send people outside that are coming in. And then after the market was over, I wrote this huge post, you know, on my digital notepad on my phone and screenshot it and put it on Instagram. Because a lot of people found me through the garden, and I wanted to let them know that I'm no longer affiliated and why. So the whole story that I've said up to now is basically what I posted. And I also said, like, you know, I want to be respectful to the people I've made connections with, and I don't want this to be a slanderous personal thing. And then I found out the garden blocked me on Instagram. I didn't even tag them in that. And I thought it was quite petty that a professional organization would use their business account to block me. And then I found Melody through that post. A lot of people, I don't know what happened, but that post that my zine blew up, a lot of people commented and connected with me. And there were some very meaningful conversations. And I learned that a lot of people felt similarly to me. And then, yeah, me and Melody talked over DMs, and she asked me, hey, you want to do an event with me? And I was like, I don't know if I'm qualified for that. And she's like, I'll handle it. Let's do tea and paint, like wine and paint night, but with tea. And we did that. And I was thinking maybe 5 people will show up at best. You know, I'm a nobody. And then a bunch of people showed up, and there was a lot of conversation and connection, like, about 105 Kiefer and fighting gentrification. And that's how we came to be. We started doing, like, Melody kept doing events, and I kept showing up to support and also, like, help out. And then more people really enjoyed the events, and I was like, we need to officialize this and have, like, an account, a name, a brand for people to turn to. And yeah, that's how we formed.
And that's Chinatown Together. Really was organic, and really was about taking up space and occupying space. And how Chinatown Together came about, like, we had all these different names, and it was really hard to determine the name. But this one just, like, made sense. It's kind of milk toast, so it's not offensive for people who feel like being anti-gentrification is, like, too radical, even though I don't think it is. And it also kind of harks back to one of the chants that we would do during the 105 Kiefer protests that got us kicked out of City Hall. So there's a chant called "Tuan Jie Li Liang Da" or "Tu Ki Li Leng Dai," which translation means, like, "Together we are stronger." And so we chanted this at City Hall in the Chinese versions, and it actually got us kicked out from City Hall, and then they locked us out of being able to partake in the public hearing as public. So the Chinese name of Chinatown Together actually is Hua Bu Tuan Jie or Hua Fao Tun Ji, which is a literal translation of Chinatown Together. And our logo, which Gal actually made, is a logo of a knot, which Tuan Jie Jie or Tun Ji Ji actually means knot. So lots of layers of meaning that it just like worked out, and it really kind of emphasizes the events we do, which is bringing Chinatown together.
That's awesome. And also extremely quintessentially Chinese for you to name your organization and have multiple layers through it as well, and even incorporate a pun. Extremely feel very seen by that. So we've talked a little bit about how you came together, and I wanted to know, for the listener who might not be familiar, you know, they hear about this organization and they're like, oh, what's going on? What kind of events are you guys throwing? So Tea and Paint is one of them. It's actually kind of like a series, one that I've gone to a few times before. But you've got other events as well that are very varied, I guess, in the I don't want to use a capitalistic word, but in the content of what's going on. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, in general, our events, we always aim to be intergenerational, free, and language accessible. So in a general sense, like, we want to ensure that these are events that like the youth, middle-aged people, and elders can all participate in. These events are free, so no one is turned away from lack of funds, and also that it's language accessible. So we always make sure that we have English, Cantonese, and Mandarin. In some instances, like our Hakka event, we also had Hakka translation, which was great. And yeah, in terms of like the types of events, we want to make sure they are arts and culture related. I think that's the most accessible way for people to come and enjoy, whether you want to sit and watch or you want to directly participate. It's up to you. Some really great events we've done throughout the year. We've done a calligraphy workshop, very popular. I know an attendee was able to ask our calligrapher to help think up a name for her baby that will be born this year, Year of the Dragon. We also had a Cantonese opera event, which a lot of people really liked. A lot of people don't find it accessible for them, like they don't know where to go or when these shows are. So we had a public facing Cantonese opera event, and some people were even like, you know, I used to watch this when, you know, back in the day, and I haven't watched it in years, and I never thought I would be able to watch it in Chinatown. And there were a lot of folks from neighboring neighborhoods that were like, I don't know what they are singing about because I don't speak Cantonese, but I really enjoyed seeing the story unfold. We've also done film screenings of Big Fight in Little Chinatown, and that's our traveling event, I like to say, where we go around to different cities and we bring some educational resources to people outside Chinatown that might want to learn more, but you know, sometimes traveling isn't an accessible thing for folks.
Yeah, and then about the film Big Fight in Little Chinatown, which covers the gentrification issues across several Chinatowns in the US and Canada, Montreal and Vancouver, highlighting some of our community members. It's been very effective in terms of drawing people in as sort of like that first touch about Chinatown. It was really interesting because when 105 Kiefer came back online in May 2023, that was the exact same week that Big Fight Little Chinatown was debuting in Vancouver. And there were so